The importance of a year, yeah, we're back to work. I took time off, all the rappers got jerked due to the fact they whacking their track. Have to go back and stack cause they lack the ingredients, EPMD and scraps for that. Yo, I'm the hip hopper, plus the soul shocker. Down with MDS, the microphone doctor. One Rex, the other the swords. And if you think you're ready to mess, kill the noise. We don't play when it's time to slay. I get a cut from my homie, yo. Then I lay back and mac and all the rhymes I pack. And wait for a sucker to jump and then attack.
Well, I'm known to be the master in the MC field. No respect in 87, 88, Chenille. Cause I produce and get loose when it's time to perform. Whack a sucker like Mop and Glow.
That's what boy.
Back the second time, but on a different assignment to do a sucker new jack who needs a rap in alignment, cause I'm the cream in the crop when it's time to do a show. Curly's on my dock for my dope intro as I glance at the double K microphone wrecker. Turn on my callers, say your mic checker to the ladies and all party goers. Some call me Pete, then other slow flower. Brothers on my jock for the way I hold a piece of steel. So what you saying? What you saying?
Putting heads to bed. Straight out the box, MCs are jumping out shoes and socks. I'm not playing. Understand what I'm saying? Cut the sucker in my way, and I'm slaying. Taking no shorts, showing vital signs. You can tell by my lines that I'm getting mines in 89. Because I'm fine as wine. Sit back and recline. Watch the sunshine. Take a stroll. Listen to rock and roll. Cut the flick at the movies. Dance a bowl. What I choose and refuse to slack. While I'm back, I take a chance, Jack. So I must attack with knick-knack, paddywhack. So I won't lack. All my style is death. And it's
peace and love, family.
You are listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio.
And it's presented like a jewel.
Enriching, encouraging, and engaging our youth.
Here on iHeartRadio.
With influential guests such as
Susan Taylor.
We're a community in crisis. And we have to step up. We have to stand up. We have to speak up. We have to work together.
Jasiri X.
And then because we have Facebook and Twitter and we're able to share this information, the information is getting out there more.
Dr. Julia Hare.
Because we live in a racist society and you can get arrested, black boys, for walking while black, thinking while black, driving while black, and anything you're doing while black.
Dick Gregory.
I can go and tell you why this program you have is so beautiful. That one, truth don't never have to be validated by ignorance.
Exactly.
But ignorance will never validate truth.
This is It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio. Tune in every Friday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on WWWEAM 1100 on iHeartRadio.
We here now.
1100Atlanta.com.
And so again, I said, you know, what you're doing is very important. And a lot of times when you do shows like this, you must have people listen. Get a tape recorder or make the tape available.
Hit us up on the hotline at 404-603-8770.
And now,
Jeff Hodges.
What's good, everybody? What's good? Welcome to another edition of It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. I'm your host, Jeff Hodges.
And I'm your girl, Shauna.
And tonight, you know it as always, we're going to give you what you need as we continue to proceed. You know, I should have been a rapper. You know, I was a rapper back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, tonight, you definitely going to get it in. We got two special guests. But before we get started with that, we definitely want to send our condolences to the Franklin family. You know, unfortunately, the Queen of Soul, Miss Aretha Franklin, has gone on. And she definitely left us with a lot of treasures, some jewels. So definitely salute and condolences to the family. And also special condolences to her son, Caliph. Had the opportunity to sit down with him a while back in his career and talk with him and his daughter that particular moment. So, you know, definitely condolences to the family. So tonight, we got a special one for you guys. We got in the building. You know, tonight we're going to do a little author work, you know, putting some author work, you know, up my lane, you know. Digging that. So on the phone with us tonight, we got award-winning author, poet, speaker, coach, host, LaDonna Marie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We're definitely excited to have you. You got a pen game out of this world, having published 8 books. It's not a game over there. You got a lot on your mind and a lot to say. So we definitely want to chop it up with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to take this thing back a little bit. So how did you even begin writing poetry? Where did you find that love?
So I started when I was about 12 years old. As a teenager, I felt a little misunderstood, but like nobody really could understand some of the things that I was going through. And so with that being the case, I had a lot of emotions, a lot of things that I wanted to get out. And, you know, one day I actually had an encounter with God, and he just said that, you know, I'm going to give you this gift so that as I heal you, the words that you write will help to heal others. And so ever since that day, I've been, you know, digging into the compassion, you know, when other people are going through overcoming obstacles or hard times, just helping them to, you know, restore themselves or to have the tips that they need to move forward. Some self-help, how to get your self-esteem up. So it just started a long time ago with me dealing with my anger, frustration coming up as a teen, you know, love, going through relationships and different things and having questions and being very inquisitive. And so it's just been, you know, since then. Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what was an early experience where you learned that words had power?
So I remember when I was young and I had a person to tell me that I was never going to be enough. Mm. And so when those words hit me, because I already, who I am today in the books and the awards and everything, you know, God kind of showed this to me when I was younger. So I already could see where I was going, but nobody else could see that. So for someone to say that you're not enough and, you know, this doesn't matter and, you know, try to belittle my dream, then I knew that, you know, everybody doesn't feel the same way that you feel about your dreams, your ambitions, your gifts, and your talents. And so I kind of withdrew and started to write more and write about those feelings and write about those emotions. And that was my therapeutic release before I even knew, you know, about counselors and therapists and all of that. That became my release to get those words out on paper instead of doing something, you know, foolish or saying something you really couldn't take back.
Right.
So I started doing that at a young age.
Right.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
When writing poetry and when doing your thing, what exactly is your writing process? Are you the person that only can write in the shower or walking? What's your thing?
So it has to actually be quiet for me because I have to hear my thoughts. And like whenever I get that inspiration, I, you know, write down the thoughts that come out of my brain. And normally it is when I'm starting to ride. Like sometimes when I'm driving a long way, poetry used to just come to me. So what I started to do is I started to use my recorder on my phone. So whenever the words would come out or they would come to my mind and I couldn't write them down and I wasn't in a space, so I would just record them and then later I would go back and transcribe them. So it has to be like a state of calm and peace so that everything can flow, because I want to be able to hear the emotions, hear the feelings, and get the accurate feelings that are coming up at that time.
Now, as I mentioned, you published 8 books now. The question is, do you want each book to stand on its own, or are you trying to build a body of work which connects each book?
Well, you know what? They actually all do. Stand on their own right. You know, every one of them, have 4 winning authors, so all of my books, you know, have awards. And you know, by what they do, because some of them are mixed, like the poetry. I have 5 poetry books, but they're different types of poetry. Like one may have 5 different areas in it that it's talking about life lessons, but then I have like a whole poetry book full of love, which is Elegant Love Notes. It's all love. And then I came out with a children's book, Larry the Alligator, Make Friends, for like the children's genre. So that was totally, it was amazing. So each book and even the workbook. So it's just, I think I want to be in all capacities of life where I can help people and meet them where they are. So if that's an adult, if that's a woman, if that's a teen, if it's a child, and they need those skills to make it through life, to, you know, for personal development, for self-growth, healing, you know, I want to be able to meet them where they are. So I'm glad that God has given me the talent to be able to spread it throughout all genres of like meeting a different, my target audience.
Nah, I had the opportunity to read Larry and His Friends, yo. That book was decent, and what made it so decent, because when I finished, it was so short, I was like, that's it? That's it? So my question is, having written a children's book, how do you connect with your young target audience?
Well, it's really awesome because children I hear in the beginning stages, they're trying to make friends.
Right.
And they don't have all the tools that they need. They don't know that it's going to be some people out there who really just don't want to be their friends. It's going to be some folks out there who are bullies. They're going to be the ones out there that they want to be friends with, but they're not in their crowd. So just giving them those options so that they can be prepared. Because a lot of children, once they get rejected, you know, they go and do things, you know, that they probably would regret. And so I wanted to meet the children where they are, because friendships are an important part of lifestyle. As you get older, you know that you don't really want a lot of people in your corner. You want the ones that are in your corner that have your back and that are loyal. But growing up in the beginning, if you don't have people who are telling you these things and people that are giving you advice on about making friends, then I wanted to step up to the plate and be able to put out something that can help them with those different situations. And Larry went through three different situations with three sets of friends. And then ultimately, he found the ones that had similarities with things that he liked so they could connect. So you don't have to be friends with people who really don't want to be friends with you. And if you, you know, so it's just like life lessons on the kids' level, things that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Now, we can't talk about portrait tonight without talking about Maya Angelou, who is definitely one of my favorite poets. Who are some poets that inspire you and why?
Maya Angelou. I met her in ninth grade. Like, this is so amazing. I was ninth grade. It was, my poetry was just starting to just, like, it impressed myself. Like, it was impressing me because I was reading her books. I was reading the poetry. I was reading Nika Giovanni. I grew up reading Countess Cullen, The Hey Black Child, You Know Who You Are. And I was reading those poems. And so when I got a chance to meet her when I was in ninth grade and to stand across from a great legend and to tell her that I wanted to impact the world like she did, right, it was an amazing, like, thing for a 14-year-old to be able to, you know, stand in that time and share that space with her and to get my gifts, I mean, my things off of my chest to say, this is what I desire to do in the world. And so I've read her poems, and I've read, like I said, Nika Giovanni, and the way that they're able to bring real life into poetry and so people can resonate, and then they can grow, they can cry, they can, you know, they can be happy, they can laugh. Like, it's all something that's a part of life. And I think that's the reason why we resonate to it. We gravitate to the poetry that they write, and it's so real and so fresh and it's dope. And so that's the type of writer that I wanted to be.
Now, as a 14-year-old reading Maya Angelou and as a grown woman now reading Maya Angelou, do you find yourself interpreting the meanings of her poems totally different throughout the times?
Yes. I do. I've read a couple of her books. And just reading them on the level now where you can see some of the trauma, you can see the different things that was going on, now that I understand, like, the ways of life and how people are and how sometimes people can show you one way and this is how they are totally. And just the things that you go through in a day-to-day life are things that you don't even know that people go through. And I think she brought to life a lot of those things throughout her poetry. And the beauty is that somebody else was going through that situation. So when she wrote that book, another person was in mind, even if it was her experience. And just like with mine, some of them are my experiences, but some of them are just downloads, because I know somebody's going to pick that book up after I write it and say, this is my life and this is how I feel.
Exactly.
And they can grow from that.
Now, we had the opportunity to have the late, great Dr. Maya Angelou on the show.
Really?
So just listening to you guys talk about it.
That is so amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. How do you feel being that you had that thought process, like you said, at 14 that you wanted to write, and now that you have written and impacted so many people internationally with your words?
I feel amazing, but you know what? I feel like there's so much work ahead. Like, I really want to continue to impact lives, because every day you see the most the people who have all the money in the bank, they're committing suicide because their life, you know, they may find something that they can't deal with, that they're not happy, or there are just some other things that are going on that we have no clue. And so I want to continue to be a person and a poet and just an author that just stretches my work out globally so people can know that somebody's there. Like, I feel you, I see you, I hear you, and this is how you can move forward. And I, so I'm just excited about the things that I have coming and everything that I've accomplished, you know, at this point in my life.
Okay. You listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. That's our very special guest, international author LaDonna Marie. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, what's up? This is your girl Selena Johnson, and breakfast is over. It's dinner time now, baby. Every Friday live on iHeartRadio, it's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio.
This is none other than Marlena, aka Lois Lane. Breakfast is over. It's dinner time now. On It's Bigger Than Hip Hop with your host Jeff Hodges on iHeartRadio every Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern.
It's bigger, it's bigger, it's bigger than hip hop, yeah.
All right, and we back.
All right.
All right, we back. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. Had to take a quick break.
So, getting back into the history of you and beginning your journey with poetry, are there any topics that you enjoy writing about more than others, or you find yourself relating to more than others?
Well, I really like, I love about love and just like empowerment. Empowerment is a big thing for me because many people, like a lot of people need it. And you would think, even I need empowerment on my most, you know, happiest day, because you have to continue to move forward. And so empowering people to know that this is not the end all be all, and that you can make it another day and you can hold your head up. And, you know, from women, like I said, from women to teens, even down to the smaller children, that's like the biggest thing for me, is always to encourage people and to build them up, or to just let them know that you're not alone. Because that right there is what gets a lot of us, because they think that they're alone. They think that they're the only person that's going through this situation, and then nobody understands. And when in actuality, there's so many other people who are sharing some of the same trials and tribulations, and, you know, they're finding an empowerment to live another day and to just be encouraged.
Absolutely. Congratulations on your laundry list of accolades. It's so much you have achieved in so many years throughout the years with your writing. And you've been acknowledged for. Did you ever think that you would be where you are today when it came to your writing?
You know what? Yes, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, like when God showed it to me and told it to me when I was younger, I believe. I mean, I didn't even write. I started writing at 12, and that was probably like 96. I didn't publish my first book until 2010. Mm-hmm. So over all those years, I kept writing because in my mind, I believed to where he said that I would be, that I would encourage people around the world with my words. And I just continued to believe every year, and I continued to write. And so I believed in myself and the gift that was given to me, and I wanted to continue for it to grow. And so the love and the belief and the empowerment and wanting to impact the world has just kept me going, you know, going on strong each and every day.
Now, this is for all the authors, including myself. You being a bestseller there on Amazon, we're going to need a little jewel or two. Like, give us a little something, how that happened, how you made that pop off.
Well, let me tell you now. So my second book, my first book was in 2010, but the second one I did in 2013. And I took those years off to kind of learn the game, like to learn, like, what do I need to do, and just to totally focus on my work and to push my work and to have it everywhere and to be visible. And I was like a walking bookmark for my own stuff. Like, it was LaDonna Marie Until Tomorrow Comes. I'm reading this, I'm doing here, I'm going here, I'm coming to the school, you know, I'm posting, I'm tweeting. I was doing everything, working hard, as they say, grinding. And finally, my book won in the Paris Book Festival in that year, and I made it to number 2 and 3 on the bestsellers list just by pure making sure that I was doing those grassroots and I was talking to people and I was always believing in myself and just being my biggest cheerleader. And so for me, that's the way that it happened, because I was hitting Facebook, Twitter. I was on everywhere. I was on a lot of shows, you know, doing interviews, reading poetry on places that I could read my poetry, and then showing up and reading them at different places. So if you turned on Instagram or you even Google my name, you would see that I was out there working. And so that's the way that it happened, you know, for the book to just go, you know, bestseller, because they saw it everywhere. And I pushed. And so since then, when I took those years off to learn how to market, where to market, and then how to, you know, believe in yourself and to push your book and to promote and advertise ahead of time, it just worked out tremendously for me in the best interest.
Now, we also cannot talk about poetry without talking about the reason why I fell in love with poetry and even art and music was when I first saw Love Jones, okay? Love Jones. And Darius Love Hall said, "Say, baby, can I be your slave?" Like, that whole moment in that movie was like, whoa, what is happening here? But it also introduced you to what a Renaissance man is with art and music and poetry. So are there any other avenues within art that you're into besides poetry?
Well, I am. I really want to. I started writing a play because I wanted to turn lessons that people being restored into a play, and so you know that's in the works now for me to get that on the stage and you know start small, but to take it you know different places, because I really want the characters in the book, because I started writing with characters. Mm-hmm. In some of my books. And so I want the characters to come alive, because I found out that most of the time when you can show somebody some things that are similar to them in another person, then they'll get it better than you just saying, this is what I think is going on with you.
Right, right.
And so by doing the characters, it's just like an indirect way of saying, you know, that's something that I'm going through. And so I really want to do the play, to let the Chatterpieces being restored, and maybe even turn it into a movie. And I'm thinking that with Larry the Alligator, I really want Larry the Alligator to be just like Barney used to be back in the day. Popping up all the kids' shows on the kids' channels and stuff. And so Larry the Alligator is going to be a series. And, you know, that's the way that I wanted to start, you know, maybe a little movie series for Larry the Alligator. So I have some big ideas, and I'm ready to work, and I'm just excited about venturing into new things.
Yes. Absolutely. Tell them where they can get your books at.
Okay, well, you can go to Amazon if you're an Amazon lover, and go to find LaDonna Marie. I'm on there, and you will find my books there. But if you would like an autographed copy, you can go over to my website, which is www.ladonnamarie.org. And I will sign your book, and I will ship it to you with love.
All right. What's your favorite part about writing poetry?
My favorite part is it's just impacting lives. I think I've always loved to encourage people. And so knowing that, like, the feedback that I get from the people who inbox me or the ones that leave reviews on Amazon, when they read it and they get it, I love it. Like, my heart is so thrilled that they actually can get it, because it was wrote in a sense that I wanted to impact the other person, the reader. So I write with the reader in mind. And when the reader drops me a line and say, hey, you know, I wouldn't have made it without this book, I feel like I'm on cloud 1,000.
I know that's right.
Now, you are also an AKA, right?
I am.
Yes.
The best sorority in the world.
How has being a sorority shaped you into being the woman that you are today?
I think the most part, when I first wanted to, be a lady of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, it was the service to all mankind is what pulled me into that direction, because I'm a person that loves to serve others and to help others and to encourage others. And so the service to all mankind and the sisterhood, and just making sure that we impacted the communities in great ways with the initiatives of all of the presidents and things like that. Those types of things and building those relationships and helping communities and different people do things, I think that's what just made me say I want to be, you know, an Alpha Kappa Alpha. I want to represent and I want to continue to serve, you know, my community and to serve mankind. And so through my books and through initiatives that I've been doing, I have a nonprofit called Planting Positive Seeds, and I do conferences for teens and also adults. And I love pouring back into people because you have to turn around sometimes and then reach back to help other people get to, you know, a higher level. And so I saw that in Alpha Kappa Alpha. And so that's the reason why I wanted to be a part a long time ago.
Well, I see that you are doing an amazing job. And, you know, you definitely have our blessings over here to just keep going. You know, words are powerful. So you have spoken your career into existence in the future. And we just can't wait to see what you got coming for us.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And with all this connectivity with this social media, what you got coming up next? Perhaps some workshops and blogs. What you got?
So, actually, tomorrow, I'm going to be at the Mississippi Book Festival, If the Rain Doesn't Rain Us Out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be at the Mississippi Book Festival from 9 o'clock Central Time to 5. But if anyone wants a book, they can always go on LaDonnaMarie.org and get a book. And coming up in September, I will be at the Congressional Black Caucus in Washington. I'll be there showcasing Larry the Alligator for 2 days on September the 14th and September the 15th. And I think in October, yes, I will be speaking for the Mississippi Library Association here in Meridian, Mississippi, just about my books and, you know, how I got started and why I think that libraries are really, really important for us to support books into our community, right, and for people to have a safe haven to go read and grow and learn and empower themselves. But everyone can stay in touch with me on my website. I'll be dropping it on my blog, different places that I go, and the different speaking engagements, because I have my own conference coming up in November the 10th, which is called A Season to Cry Out. So I'll be doing that. And in December, I'll be speaking at You Are My Sister as a motivational speaker in another part of Louisiana.
Well, is there any other advice you would like to give to any upcoming authors out there, poets, artists, singers? Because music is a part of poetry, too. Any advice would you give them?
Yes, listen, and singing is my first gift. You know, I need to work that muscle a little bit more. I think I need to get together and put a single out or something before life gets away with me. But I just want to let everybody know that, you know, don't give up on your dreams. And even if things aren't starting like right now, just get started. You know, if you're scared or if you feel like you don't have all the information, you know, don't worry about that. Just get started. Because I have a lot of people who always say they have books in their bellies. But the thing about the book being in your belly is that no one can get it from there. So you have to pull it out. You have to write that song. You have to, you know, start the first draft of that play or that movie or sing, write that verse or that hook. You just have to get started. And like Nike says, just do it. Don't wait. Just start. And so that's the reason why I started. And look at how everything has gone 20 years later. I'm, you know, winning. I went to London back in March and won Author of the Year in another country. And so believing in yourself and knowing that you got it and you can do it, just get started today, tonight.
There it is. It's definitely been an honor and a pleasure, LaDonna, and we wish you nothing but continued success.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity to be in your space.
Absolutely. You listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. That's our very special guest, LaDonna Marie. Y'all heard her. Get them books. Y'all heard them lessons. I know one of them lessons when I was writing was monitoring to how many words that I got to. And once I seen me get past a certain number, boy, it was off to the races. So get inspired, believe in yourself, and make it happen.
All right.
We're going to take a quick break, give you that moment in hip hop, and we'll be right back.
It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio presents A Moment in Hip Hop History with Mocha Brown. Born Kimberly Jones in 1974 to Trinidadian parents who say Lil' Kim was destined for stardom. Kimberly was unfulfilled in her regular 9-to-5 in retail, so she learned to express herself through rap music as a teen in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. Under the guidance of the icon Biggie Smalls, Lil' Kim successfully conquered hip-hop in the 90s. Kim's collaborations with Christina Aguilera and Mary J. Blige were instant classics, but her three consecutive platinum albums solidified her reign as the original Queen Bee of hip-hop. Her bold, explicit lyrics and sexy persona put her in a category of her own. Tonight, it's Bigger Than Hip-Hop Radio salutes Lil' Kim, a pioneer of hip-hop. This is Mocha Brown with their moment in hip-hop history.
I come from Bed-Stuy. When niggas either do or they gon' die. Gotta keep the ratchet close by. Someone murdered. Nobody seen, nobody heard it. Just another funeral service. Niggas will get at you. Come through shining, they at you. In broad daylight, kidnap you. Let's get clapped through. Police stay on us like tattoos. Niggas only grind cause we have to. Money is power.
This your man, Pastor Roy. You listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio Show with your host, Jeff Hodges.
And we back. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. I'm your host, Jeff Hodges.
And I'm your girl, Sean. They trying to leave me out.
Not at all. We can't never do that. Definitely the balance over here, you heard? And as always, we keep it pushing. We got a second half for y'all. We got a little something special as we continue on. Our special guest is a wife, mother, minister, a writer, and a teacher. In addition to that, she also facilitates a Motivation Monday series on her Facebook Live, joining us tonight as we discuss trauma, causes, symptoms, and paths to recovery. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome to the show, Stephanie Trower. Hey, Steph, how you doing?
Hey, Brother Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Can't leave out my girl here, Shauna.
Hi.
Hey, girl, how you doing?
Good. Got a lot to talk to you about tonight.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm ready. I'm excited.
Well, first, I definitely want to go ahead and say I applaud what you are doing when it comes down to these women and talking to women. But most importantly, when it comes down to women recognizing trauma, because what I've realized is a lot of women do not even realize when they're in a negative situation. Some people just think that it's normal. And what you're doing is you are bringing light to a very quiet situation. And I am definitely happy to be talking to you tonight.
All right, that is awesome, and I'm so glad you said that because that is actually one of the points. That's how we're just going to kind of kick off our conversation tonight, right, is talking about that because we actually, a lot of us do not know that we've actually have experienced trauma or traumatic experience. So, I mean, you've just segued us real good, girl.
So, yeah, let's talk about the different types of trauma. Let's kick it off with that.
All right. So we do. We have different types of trauma. And some of them, you know, we are very familiar with. Death, divorce or a breakup, violence, neglect, violation, abuse, terminal or serious illness can be traumatic, both to the person that's ill and also to the family members, separation and extreme poverty. So when we're even talking about even specifically the African-American community, think about some of the things that we have experienced that when you have a lot of violence that you're growing up with in the community, we become desensitized, but actually we are traumatized because of what goes on in our communities every single day. Now, if some of us that have been exposed to extreme poverty, that can be traumatizing. How many of us have that grandpa that's real stingy and he'll hang on to a quarter, right? Because he grew up extremely poor, and so that type of behavior or those tactics, they come from traumatic experiences.
Now, what traumatic experience have you endured and how did you overcome?
I came to discover was I had a breakup. I had a really bad breakup back in 2007. I didn't realize it was traumatic until years later. I had gone through therapy, which I hope that we'll kind of talk about and discuss tonight. But it was extremely traumatizing because I had set up a narrative and I had set up a thought process in my mind that I was going to be with this person forever. And we had been together for quite some time, starting out in our teenage years. And so when that relationship broke off, I went into a deep depression. I had never even experienced depression until I had gone through the breakup. It was actually a 2.5 year process of depression. And so that separation, that unplugging from that relationship was seriously dramatic. So it caused me to have to examine myself, examine a lot of my behaviors. And so that really was one of the catalysts for me moving from one phase of my life to another. And it was a lot of work. I'll tell you that. It was a lot of work. And it was also my introduction to therapy, for sure.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned a moment ago about being desensitized. I definitely want to put out there before we go further, you know, my target has always been the cats in the street because my whole platform, Me Transformed, from them. And being in the streets definitely can relate to being desensitized, and once transforming, being in touch with my feelings again was definitely, you know, it was a different experience. So when one look in retrospect, like, wow, after all the funerals and after all the death and how it just had no, it appeared to have no effect, in actuality it was having a lot of effect. So definitely can relate to you when you say about that disconnection right there.
I definitely was listening to your story, and, you know, I'm connecting to you on a whole nother level, and I believe that God sends certain people in your life at certain moments for specific reasons. Fortunately, I recently have just got out of a situation in which my partner began to be physically abusive towards me, and I found myself, after it happened over a few times, and you know how those conversations are, he's like, I'm never going to do it again, I'm sorry,
yeah,
you know, it was an accident this time, but once it happened 3, 4, 5 times, what I found surprising was, I've always thought I was a strong woman, young lady, and I always was taught, you know, if a man put his hands on you, you don't go back, and here I am going back, and I felt like I was addicted to the drama. If we wasn't arguing, I felt as if something was wrong. Is that a form of me being addicted to the trauma, or am I just not recognizing that it was bad?
A lot of times what happens is when we experience something traumatic, especially when logically and all actuality, you know, common sense would tell us, why would I subject myself to this type of relationship, or why would I go back? And so I don't necessarily think that it's an addiction to drama or trauma. I think that it is a natural reaction for us to, for whatever, and for all intents and purposes, to look at the good in someone. We, especially when we have already, a lot of times what we do, especially as women, is that we already create a certain narrative or scenario. This is how this is going to be. I am in this relationship, and this is the expected outcome that I have. And so as we sort of drive ourselves to that expected outcome, and when other things come into play that are begin to be contrary to that outcome that we're trying to reach, then that's when we start trying to maybe navigate a certain way that really is completely opposite of what's healthy and good for us. And so it's not necessarily that you are addicted. It's just that you're trying to almost make some corrections in hope that you can reach that expected outcome, which is natural when you have a partner, when you have a husband, you know, boyfriend or girlfriend, what have you. You make plans, you have dreams, you have goals. And so when those things, those idols or those pictures begin to get torn down or shattered, you know, then, you know, we try to come back and try to keep that, because those are our dreams and our goals, and everybody has them. But and also going through domestic violence is definitely a traumatic experience, especially when you do consider yourself a strong person. And also to make sure that we know that men can be victims of domestic violence as well. But we picture ourselves as strong, yet we go through those things, which is can be completely traumatizing, and it will then cause us part of the backlash. And some of the symptoms, and we want to talk tonight about some of the symptoms, is to blame ourselves. I thought I was strong. I thought I was smarter than that. How did I let myself get into that? And so we will begin to also repeat that type of narrative to ourselves, which is a symptom of trauma, for sure.
I just want to let you know, you are a strong queen. He was the weak one. He was having a weak moment. It's not about
exactly
you. Talking about this domestic and all of those type of areas and being faced with that. Well, how does your technique game look like? Tell us about some techniques in dealing with all of this traumatic experiences and being in those positions.
Well, first of all, what we want to do is, and you know, kind of we want to go back, because A, some of us don't know that we've actually you know, experienced trauma. So what we want to do is sort of identify, and it comes back to really is looking at our life. And so a lot of times either our life is on a hamster wheel, is what I like to say, or our life is sort of on pause or at a standstill. That if you notice a lot of cycles in your life, a lot of behaviors or things that you have a certain narrative if you're in a certain situation. So this kind of lets us know that maybe something that we've experienced, but we have to be able, a lot of times these traumatic experiences are very painful. There's something that either A, we don't want to explore or even, you know, admit or face, or sometimes what we do is we wear our trauma like a badge. Well, I was abused, and so this is why I do this. And so, but oftentimes, whatever it is, that thing that you are doing is causing your life to be on pause or be on a hamster wheel. So first things first is you want to do is sort of admit that you need help. So you've recognized that you have behaviors, you have a certain thought process or paradigm that keeps you from moving forward. Anything that boxes you in from living life, from being able to accept other people for their differences and who they are and where they are in their walk in life, anything that kind of keeps you boxed in on a hamster wheel or standing still, definitely is probably pretty toxic for you. So first you want to admit you finally have gotten to that place where, you know, I've been through something or some things, right? Multiple, because some of us have been through multiple traumatic experiences, admitting that we need help. And one of the biggest things, especially, and I am a huge champion for the African-American community, is getting help, getting therapy, and we're talking professional help. Now, I am a minister. I believe in the church, and I believe in God's church. But also, too, is that a lot of times we mistake professional help for help from the clergy. Now, I will coach you. I can mentor you all day long, but I am not a medical professional. And we need to talk about it more inside, outside of the church, that there's nothing wrong with getting therapy, intense therapy. therapy, not only for our women, but I want to encourage our brothers to seek help too, because it's so important that we do that. There's a huge stigma in the African American community about seeking mental professional help from a therapist, from a psychoanalyst, from a psychiatrist, from a therapist or a counselor. You know how we were raised, what goes on this house stays in this house. What goes on in the family, there have been traumatic experiences. How many generations have grown up with sexual abuse in the family, and you don't talk about it because we've been taught that. It's just, you know, and secrecy is a survival mechanism. We got that from slavery. We got to be quiet. Mm-hmm. You keep your mouth shut. You don't say anything. That has been one of our tools of survival, but we have to lay that tool down, because secrecy, we're only as sick as our secrets. And so it's no longer necessary for self-preservation. So we have to begin to really take a hold of our mental health. It's so important, especially in the African-American community.
I'm definitely a big advocate in regards to, as you said, our mental health and addressing it and facing certain issues. Having created this platform, being very transparent, I am one who definitely utilized those services, suffered with depression after coming out them streets, touching that type of money, and then not going into the ordinary everyday. So it was definitely a transition, and utilizing those tools helped me definitely get through it.
Absolutely, absolutely. We want to educate ourselves. Exactly. So everybody is different, you know, and a lot of times, you know, so not only going into therapy, but when you find out exactly what it is you've got, you may have PTSD or whatever the case, educate yourself. The more that you know, I think the more that we start to get comfortable with who we are. Interpersonal relationships are definitely good. You want to maintain your current health. The interpersonal relationships, so friends, family members, your social life. And I want to reiterate, we want to maintain the healthy relationships. And those people, so if your interpersonal relationships, maintain the healthy ones and cut ties with those toxic folks. Let's get rid of them. Push them out. Make no apologies. Don't feel bad about cutting people off. And I mean literally, you don't, I'm not saying wean them off. I say cut them off.
From the knees. From the knees. You listening to Is Bigger Than Hip Hop. That's our very special guest, Stephanie Tribal. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what looks and what is healthy.
What you talking about? Check it.
What's up? This is Damian Crazy Legs Hall, co-owner of WWRN Radio. Keep us locked 24/7 and enjoy our classic hip-hop and R&B station.
Oh, yeah, baby. It ain't over.
Don't touch that dial, baby.
This your man, Pastor Roy. You listening to his Bigger Than Hip-Hop radio show with your host, Jeff Hodges.
East up. This is the Invisible Man, and you listen to the hottest radio show on the air. Breakfast is over, and it's dinner time now. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop with your host, Jeffrey Hodges, on iHeartRadio. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio.
And we're back. Let's talk about what healthy looks like as we took that break on. What exactly is healthy? Because everybody's screaming healthy, healthy, but exactly what is a healthy relationship?
Absolutely. You know, a healthy relationship is one that has an equal amount, first and foremost, of give and take. And so if you find that either you are the one that is constantly giving, and I, you know, especially for women, you can either have that friend or that girlfriend where, you know, you constantly have to give advice. She is constantly coming to you with her drama in her life, needing something emotionally, spiritually, monetarily. But if you, if So it's very one-sided. And so, or someone who they may show up as a friend, but really in all actuality, they're not loyal. They don't have your best interest at heart. Outside of you being in their presence, you know that they really do not stand up for you. So someone who is your equal, a lot of times what we do is we'll gravitate to someone we either think we can get something from or someone who we can give to. But a relationship should be where not only you can get something from that person, but you're able to give as well, so that it's equal on both sides and so that you're constantly reciprocating. There is definitely something to reaping and sowing. And so whatever you reap, you should also be able to sow. And so a healthy relationship, whether it is your man or your woman, but also your friends and those that your counterparts and those that you stand shoulder to shoulder with, you want that to be, it should be equal for sure.
Now, what advice would you give to those who are looking to forgive and move on? I know for me personally, my biggest thing that I'm dealing with now is I don't want to be a bitter woman. I don't want to be angry and I don't want to have hate in my heart. So how can you go about forgiving those who have hurt you?
You know, I have found, because I had a hard time, I would always circle back. I would make these huge declarations, right? I would be like, I'm going to forgive, and I would cry, and I would do the ugly cry, right? And then I would find a lot of that bitterness and that resentment. It will bubble back when my mind, don't let me get in my quiet place, and my mind start turning, and then it would bubble back. But what I finally did was I found what the issue was, and it was really forgiving myself. So what I did is I started to forgive myself because I felt angry that I had allowed myself to get into a certain situation with that person. And really that forgiveness started with me. And I realized that not only do I have to realize that that person is not perfect, that person makes mistakes, but that I am not perfect and I made mistakes. Maybe I did not make the best choice to get involved with a person, but I am human. And when I let myself off the hook, it was so much easier then to let that other person off the hook. And I could just move on. And so really something that I have found is truly helpful is forgive yourself first. Let that go. Whatever you feel that you've been taken from or it's been taken away from you or that you've been robbed from, a lot of times we look at ourselves first as the one to blame, even when we don't voice it. But let yourself off the hook, and it will be so much easier to begin to let that other person off the hook and to move forward.
You know, they say while you're sitting there angry at somebody, they're sleeping well, so you might as well forgive them.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure.
Talk about your Motivation Mondays and what's that all about.
So Motivation Mondays, what I do is I try to come on and talk an hour just about really whatever is going on in this crazy head of mine, and I just have a heart to motivate women. A lot of times I have found that we have ate up so much propaganda, so much misinformation about who we should or should not be. And I just want to motivate people to live their best life, especially live their life in God. And a lot of times, a lot of us, we have a total misrepresentation. It's a whole nother show I could talk about the craziness that goes on with the church. But when you take a step outside of the church, and I love, I love assembling. I love the assembly of the saints.
Right.
But what I realized is that when I developed my own relationship with God, my relationship with God, that's when doors were kicked open for me. And so Motivation Monday is really a snapshot and a picture in different forms of where my mind has been opened up, and just to motivate others and hopefully to encourage them, to empower them to start their own journey in having those doors kicked open for them as well.
Now, is this a book? I think it's your book about Note to Self.
Yes. So my book is in, right now I've been working with my editor. I had a long conversation with her just yesterday. And so the book is called Note to Self. And what it's about taking a look at a lot of our selfish ways. And so it is a way to examine just how selfish our generation is. And it sounds pretty harsh, but that's the vein that I always come in. I really push people to do the hard work. A lot of times it's the work that nobody really wants to do, but I've definitely been called not only to do it in my own life, but to champion and come alongside women and help them do their own work. But it is an examination of selfishness, but how we can kind of look and identify areas where we're a little selfish, but then also know that at the end of the day, none of us are perfect, and how I can encourage someone just to be a little less selfish in your everyday life.
All right. Talk about Woman's Net, and what's that all about?
Oh, okay, womansheart.net.
Yeah,
so I am a blogger for womansheart.net. It's myself and four other ladies. And we just, you know, Motivation Mondays is a part of a womansheart.net. And so I do that leg, and I do a lot of the teaching. We have some women that are doing some outreach here in Washington State. I'm located on the western side of the mountains, and we have some ladies that are on the front lines over in eastern Washington, on the eastern side of the mountains, where they're going out and they're serving the community. And so we like to empower, and we love to write. We also love to interview other women and have them share their stories. And so it's just a great group of women that are trying to touch lives in any way, shape, form, or fashion, whether it's right there on the front lines, whether it's we're using social media and media outlets to put writings together to inspire other women. We're always looking for guest bloggers, so that's what womansheart.net is all about. And we're currently been talking and in the works of talking about doing some revamping to the ministry, so we're super excited. We're going to be we're going to put our nose to the grindstone this fall and start working on that, so I'm excited about that.
Stephanie, it's definitely been an honor and a pleasure. Shout out to our mutual friend Delana, who brought us together.
Yes.
Continue success in empowering our women and providing that great content and information. And thank you for joining us here. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop.
Thank you for having me. God bless you.
No doubt. It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. Peace and love, family.
Peace and love, family.
You are listening to It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio.
And it's presented like a jewel.
Enriching, encouraging, and engaging our youth.
Here on iHeartRadio.
With influential guests such as Susan Taylor.
We're a community in crisis, and we have to step up. We have to stand up. We have to speak up. We have to work together.
Jasiri X.
And then because we have Facebook and Twitter, and we're able to share this information, the information is getting out there more.
Dr. Julia Hare.
Because we live in a racist society, and you can get arrested, black boys, for walking while black, thinking while black, driving while black, at anything you're doing while black.
Dick Gregory.
I can go and tell you why this program you have is so beautiful. That one, truth don't never have to be validated by ignorance. But ignorance will never validate truth.
This is It's Bigger Than Hip Hop Radio. Tune in every Friday from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern on WWWEAM 1100 on iHeartRadio.
We hear now.
1100Atlanta.com.
And so again, I said, you know, what you're doing is very important. And a lot of times when you do shows like this, you must have people listen. Get a tape recorder or make the tape available.
Hit us up on the hotline at 404-603-8770.